But I think it gets at the essence of Braxton Bragg's one part of his personality. As the story goes, Bragg was out at a small post commanding a company in the West. And because there was a shortage of officers there, he was also acting as the temporary post quartermaster and commissary. Well, as company commander, he made a request of the quartermaster for something. In other words, he wrote it out. And as quartermaster, he denied it. As company commander, he gave a fuller explanation of why he needed it, gave it to the quartermaster, and as quartermaster, he denied it again and passed it on up to the post commander. Well, the post commander looked at it, really couldn't believe it, and said, "My God, Mr. Bragg, you've quarreled with every other officer in the Army, and now you're quarreling with yourself." Now, this may not have ever happened, but a number of soldiers related the anecdote, and it makes the point that Bragg was an argumentative fellow. He was not popular among his troops. Never during the war was he popular among his troops. He was seen as a martinet. He could be aggressive on the battlefield, but he's an officer whose aggression on the battlefield never seemed to yield substantial results. So that is Braxton Bragg, a person we'll see a good deal of as we go through the course. Before Henry Halleck journeyed east to take up his duties as general-in-chief, he had planned a movement against Chattanooga, Tennessee, and then against the railroad that ran from there to Atlanta. Don Carlos Buell was to carry out this move. But in a scenario that would be replayed many times in the Western theater, Confederate cavalry and guerrillas so disrupted Buell's supply lines that this campaign never really came to anything. The Federals were not successful in taking Chattanooga. And they learned, as they would learn time and time again, that it was a prodigiously difficult task to move a substantial body of troops through country such as that in East Tennessee and keep them supplied if there were Confederate cavalry and guerrillas operating in their rear. So the Union threat to Chattanooga was not going to come to anything. Bragg cast his eye toward Chattanooga. He had been retraining and refitting his army near Tupelo, Mississippi, and this is what he planned to do. He planned to leave about half of his army under Earl Van Dorn and Sterling Price. Sterling Price we last saw in Missouri. He's now come to northern Mississippi, and he and Van Dorn will share command of about half of Bragg's force. The other half, roughly 35,000 men, would first go to Chattanooga, there to unite with about 10,000 Confederates under a general named Edmund Kirby Smith, and then the joint Confederate force would mount an invasion first into Tennessee and then on into Kentucky. Now, Bragg had a range of things that he hoped to achieve. He hoped to cut Don Carlos Buell's supply line back to Louisville. Buell is in Nashville. He hopes to cut that supply line, cut Buell off from Kentucky. He thought he could compel Buell to abandon Tennessee if he did that, make Buell come out of Nashville and head back toward Kentucky, make Buell fight his way back toward Louisville, and Bragg's force would have the advantage of being in between Buell and Louisville and in a strong defensive position, potentially. So that's one thing he'd hoped to do. He also hoped that by marching into Kentucky, he would rally the citizens of Kentucky to come to the Confederate banner. He and many other Confederates believed that Kentuckians were really Confederates at heart and that they were being held in the Union against their will by Union military might. So if we can just get an army into Kentucky, he thought, they will flock to our banners. He also thought that perhaps if he could remain in Kentucky through the fall, and he hoped to maneuver for a good long while there, he would be in a position to menace Union forces in Kentucky at the time of the Northern off-year elections in November of 1862, and he hoped that his presence would hurt the Republicans and help the Democrats. Confederates believed if the Democrats were in control, they'd have a better chance of negotiating some kind of peace with independence for the Confederacy. So many things that Bragg hoped he might accomplish. Let's move on to look at the beginning part of the campaign. It went splendidly for the Confederates initially. Kirby Smith moved first. He marched quickly northward. He bypassed Cumberland Gap on his way north and struck deep into Kentucky, where on August 30 he defeated and captured most of a 6,000-man Union garrison at Richmond, Kentucky.